We'll call the meeting, Veterans Military Affairs Finance and Policy Division order. We have a quorum, so Representative Heinrich, would you like to approve the minutes from the last meeting?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I move to approve the minutes from the last meeting.
Any additions or corrections? Minutes will stand as approved then. With that, we'll stand through the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay, if we go to item four on the agenda, overview of programs addressing the veterans and homeless, and we'll have a presentation from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Andy Jarvis and Paul Williams. Go ahead, gentlemen.
And Brad.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Oh, sorry about that.
My name is Brad Lindsay. I'm actually the Deputy Commissioner of Programs and Services at Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and I have Andy Jarvis here with me, who's the Director of Veterans Programs for the department.
And being new to this, gentlemen, I don't always recognize the faces, so I apologize.
No problem, sir. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we can't even see him back all the way down there.
We need binoculars. Go ahead, gentlemen.
All right. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for allowing me to come here today and present to you on the efforts of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs in the area of veterans homelessness. First, let me say that MDVA is and has been committed to ending veterans homelessness. As of January 25th, we had 236 homeless veterans on our registry in Minnesota. To put that into perspective, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs estimates that there are approximately 327,629 veterans in Minnesota. That means homeless veterans comprise just 0.07% of veterans in the state. I point that out not to minimize the problem, because one homeless veteran is, of course, too many, but to emphasize that this is a solvable problem. In 2010, VA Secretary Shinseki made the bold announcement of his goal to end veterans homelessness within 5 years. It was a very ambitious goal, and we obviously haven't gotten there yet, but the statement provided a sense of urgency and a sense of purpose that we all needed. It also brought with it much-needed VA resources, including housing vouchers known as HUD-VASH. Since 2011, MDVA has been working with renewed vigor to end veterans homelessness. We aren't in this alone. We work with our fellow state agencies on the Minnesota Interagency Council for Homelessness, the federal VA, and our community partners like the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. Since 2010, there has been a 53% reduction in homelessness among veterans in Minnesota, based on the official HUD point in time, or PIT count, which is conducted every January. It was actually conducted again just last week. The PIT count is a useful and independent measuring tool of our success, but we realized in 2013 that it was just a number. We needed to put a name to each of those numbers and then work with our partners to create a personalized housing plan for each of those veterans. That realization led to MDVA and Minnit working together to create the Homeless Veterans Registry, something we did within 2 to 3 weeks. It's amazing. Prior to this by-name list, many veterans were being identified by multiple parties, meaning providers weren't getting a good handle on actual inflow because there was no way to deduplicate them in the systems. To date, 4 continuums of care comprising 46 counties have met the federal benchmarks and passed the federal review process for ending veterans homelessness. One more continuum of care in southeast Minnesota, which encompasses another 20 counties, is ready for their federal review. Now is not the time to take our foot off the gas. With the help of our partners, we will get this done and reach the goal of functional zero. So does that mean there'll be no more homeless veterans in Minnesota? Unfortunately, no. It means that our focus will switch to prevention and that veterans' homelessness will be rare, brief, and non-recurring. We'll have the capacity to address a housing crisis swiftly. As former Commissioner Shelto recently said, ending veterans' homelessness is achievable when there's a plan and strong partnerships. Together we can change lives and bring these veterans all the way home. So, Mr. Chair, that concludes my prepared testimony. And if I could, I'd like to turn this over to Director Andy Jarvis, who is in charge of MDVA's homeless efforts, for his presentation on where we're at in a little more detail to what I've talked about here.
Just one second, Mr. Jarvis. Representative Detmer has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And of that 236, I think sometimes we mention that there are some veterans that are homeless that don't want help. Are they still part of that 236, or are they taken off that number?
We try to engage those, Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative. We try to engage those homeless veterans as well. We do, after a number of attempts, basically stop counting them on the registry. They're still on the registry, and we're still there to assist whenever they're ready, but we do take them off our actual active caseloads.
Mr. Chair, just follow up.
Detmer.
Do you know the numbers that we're talking about that just don't want to be part of a program for homelessness?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, I don't have that with me right now.
Okay. If you could maybe provide that to the committee. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Then I have one quick question before you start, Mr. Jarvis. So recently, I believe it was last week or possibly the week before, there was a statewide homeless survey count that was done. Do you take part in that so the veterans get adequately documented in that part of it?
Mr. Chair, yes, we do. We have a team every year for at least the last 8 years. We have a team that sets up kind of a command center. So if a veteran is identified by the street outreach teams, that we can react right then if possible and assist them.
Thank you. Any other questions? Mr. Jarvis.
Mr. Chair, thank you. First, I want to just point your attention to our first slide that's been up while Deputy Commissioner Lindsay was speaking. This is the cover of our 2018 annual report, but I think it's fitting when we talk about veterans' homelessness that MDVA is always evolving on this subject matter. Homelessness is a wicked problem. The barriers and causes of it are ever-changing based upon different environmental and social factors, and so in order to combat it and end veteran homelessness, we need to work across sectors collaboratively and always evolve the way we do business and break down barriers. This next slide depicts our current homeless programs org structure. And I present this because when we look at MDVA and how we've evolved to deal with homeless veterans, our current org structure, I think, says a lot. If you were to ask me, show me the org chart for your homeless team from 7 years ago, I would have a hard time doing that because we didn't have as solid as a structure as we have now. Under Deputy Commissioner Lindsay's leadership, we've allocated dedicated staff that are dealing with homelessness, and we've also we use staff from other divisions to support our efforts to end veteran homelessness. We have a homeless programs coordinator, Paul Williams, who is in charge of leading all of our efforts to end veteran homelessness. Underneath him, we have Sloan Kessler, who's an assistant to the homeless programs coordinator, and they collaboratively manage the veteran registry, stakeholder engagement, statewide collaboration. We also have a pilot program that we're now making permanent. It's the SOAR program, which I'll speak about a little later, which we've seen great success with. We have a Union Gospel Move program. We help. We are the financial conduit for the legislatively appropriated MACV grant. And then we also have recently established an internal work group within MDVA to look at all of our sectors of business, both the programs and services, central office, and our healthcare side, to see what ideas and strategies we can collaboratively come up with to help end homelessness. This next slide shows a graphical depiction of the state's plan to end homelessness. So there's four subpopulations. Veterans are one of them. Chronically homeless families and youth are the other three subpopulations. Within those subpopulations, there are seven principles in the state's strategic plan to end homelessness, which is called the Heading Home Plan. Each strategy has several action items for agencies, or each principle, rather, has several strategies listed underneath them, and then each strategy has several action steps that agencies either individually or collectively have agreed to complete in order to help fulfill those strategies to end homelessness across the board. And when we look at the veteran subpopulation, we are the closest subpopulation to ending homelessness, which we believe is really exciting. And we believe that when we do that, it'll have an acceleration effect on all the other subpopulations. So the Minnesota Interagency Council on Homelessness is a council comprised of 11 different state agencies. Of those, they're listed here. The commissioners of each of those agencies head the council and give strategic direction to the different council members and teams within in the council. The council is led or facilitated, I should say, by the Office to Prevent and End Homelessness, and Kathy Timbrook is the State Director to Prevent and End Homelessness. She's housed out of Minnesota Housing. So when we look at the Office to Prevent and End Homelessness, there are four state agencies that support that office. We are one of those four agencies. The Department of Education, Department of Human Services, and Minnesota Housing are the other three, and this office is housed within Minnesota Housing. How do they facilitate it? How do they move our efforts across the state to end homelessness altogether? There's three teams or three elements that have been established. You have the council, which are the commissioners who provide that high-level strategic direction and foresight not only to the senior leadership teams and action teams, but also to their internal staff. The senior leadership team is made up of deputy commissioners, assistant commissioners, and senior managers within these agencies on the council, and they help facilitate sharing of ideas, breaking down barriers, things of that nature. And the action teams are your staff that are charged with carrying out the action items listed within the plan. So in 2014, the MDVA created a staff position to coordinate ending veteran homelessness statewide. The Homeless Veteran Registry was officially launched by the agency in December of 2014 and provided really the first holistic way for veteran service providers to understand how many new veterans were being identified and how many veterans were being housed. Prior to this by-name list, many veterans were being identified by multiple parties, meaning providers weren't getting a good handle on the actual inflow because there was no way to deduplicate them. Similarly, in terms of veterans moving into housing, there was no reliable way of even knowing what the success rate was at a community level since there was an unknown amount of overlap between veterans being served by multiple different partners. These measures provided communities with a collective measure of success, and which has helped generate momentum, focus, and increased commitment to the goal of ending veteran homelessness. At these weekly meetings, every veteran receives approximately a 2 to 3 minute discussion regarding their barriers and strategies to overcome their barriers in order to attain permanent housing. And it's a really interesting experience to be part of these meetings, to think when we say 2 to 3 minutes and people will say, what can you do in 2 to 3 minutes? And you can do a lot because really it's about facilitating the discussion in the room and linking up case managers with all the different providers that have the capability of helping that veteran. And then outside of that meeting, a lot of legwork and groundwork gets completed.
Excuse me, Mr. Jarvis. So you say, excuse me, the veteran receives 2 to 3 minutes. So what do you do? I assume those meetings are down here. What do you do if you have a veteran from Thief River Falls? Because transportation is always tough. So do you Do you have a county veteran services officer get them on the phone with you to talk about this, or how do you deal with Greater Minnesota veterans that may be in a homeless situation?
That's a great question, Mr. Chair. So to clarify, we conduct three different homeless veteran registry meetings, and they are the Hennepin meeting, the Ramsey meeting. Those are two separate continuums of care, and then Greater Minnesota, which in your example, that's what it would fall into. And if you look to the screen here, which I apologize to fit all of them on there, you may not be able to see them, but this is a list of the partners that are on our Tennyson. So across the state, we partner with both community veteran service officers, Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, and other groups that operate in Greater Minnesota to break down the barriers that the veterans are facing. Does that answer your question, Mr. Chair?
Thank you.
So when we look at this list of partners, I think it's amazing to think how we have collectively engaged with all these different organizations, and we continue to engage with them. And I really want to highlight some of the key partners in our mission to end veteran homelessness that have done a lot of work for us. That's the County Veteran Service Officers, Catholic Charities, Lutheran Social Services, the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, St. Stephen's Human Services, the Salvation Army, Union Gospel Mission, and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. So Registry 2.0, as I said, the registry turned four in December of 2018, and over that time, the way we do business has evolved. We've found some small flaws in our current registry. We found ways to improve the efficacy and streamline some of the processes. So currently we're engaged with Minit, who's been a key partner in the creation and maintenance of our registry, to update it into what we're calling Registry 2.0. The improvement to existing functionality to increase performance and improve user experience with an HVR landing page and housing team meeting forms, the implementation of a client-side SharePoint development tool to support existing functionality within the Homeless Veteran Registry platform, and one of the big things we're excited about is the implementation of a business analytics tool to create an external facing dashboard for aggregated data. So individuals from partners to lawmakers to the public can go out and look at the veteran homeless data and slice it and dice it in a couple different ways. We started ramping up the project, and our staff are engaged with Minit on that. And we expect to have that 2.0 release in April of 2019. I want to talk a little bit about our stakeholder engagement, Built for Zero campaign. Built for Zero is a national effort that has been largely successful in eradicating chronic homelessness and veteran homelessness in communities that have engaged with this initiative. The Hennepin County Continuum of Care signed on to work with Community Solutions to solve chronic and veteran homelessness, and we're working closely with them to action meaningful change in Hennepin County and across the state, really, to end veteran homelessness. The strategies and lessons we learn with Hennepin County can easily be applied to other continuums of care. During the planning session with our Build for Zero coach, we discuss the plan and measurable goals and track our progress. Together, we meet, strategize, and action our measurable goals to continue making progress. And our coach has experience in the Los Angeles area and is familiar with the complexities of homelessness in large metropolitan areas, which we believe will help us with our goals in Hennepin County being the most populous COC out of the 10.
Excuse me, Mr. Jarvis. Representative Becker-Finn has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was going to ask this at the end, but I think it's appropriate since you just brought up somebody coming in from Los Angeles. So one thing I've been thinking about today and this week especially, when we have long periods of time where it's even colder than what we're used to dealing with here in Minnesota, do you guys have the resources you need, and are there additional needs that you have? You know, are we doing extra outreach at this on weeks like this where being homeless is particularly dangerous?
Mr. Chair, Representative Becker, thank you for the question. I can't I can't answer specifically the increase in outreach that's happening, but I can say that outreach efforts typically do increase for the unsheltered population when we enter in really cold polar vortexes like we're in now. And there are also a lot of shelters that stand up in the winter months to kind of carry that capacity when we enter the cold months.
Follow-up, Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just want to encourage you, you know, as we have kind of, I mean, this is even cold for Minnesota this week, so just want to encourage you and all the organizations you work with, if more resources are needed for this, to let folks know that you need those resources, because I think it seems like a base level of what we can be doing for folks. So thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And of those 236, do you have a breakdown of what age groups they are in terms of, you know, what conflict or what war that they served in? And is there a breakdown by ages of those 236, Mr. Jarvis?
Mr. Jarvis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, I don't have that data available. I believe we can break down by service era. Given a little bit of time, we don't have a pre-built report for that, but we could extract that if you find it useful.
Could you share that with the committee? Thank you, Mr. Jarvis.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
So to finish off this slide, the Built for Zero veteran team includes three of us, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Federal VA, and the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. We're working closely with Hennepin County to develop the strategies and goals for the veteran population collectively.
If I could ask you that, you keep bringing Hennepin County up. What is the status on homelessness of veterans in Hennepin County?
Mr. Chair, great question. I do have a slide coming up that will show a breakdown of the numbers. Thank you. So another item under stakeholder engagement. This summer, we started what we're calling the Veteran Corps Collaborative. So it's a partnership collaboration between MDVA, the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, and the Federal VA. Really the three key players working in sync to end veteran homelessness in Minnesota. And when I see key players, I want to expand on that. There's other key players, but the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs has been charged with carrying out the state's plan. The Federal VA has been charged with carrying out the federal plan. And the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, their entire mission is to end veteran homelessness in the state of Minnesota. So coming from the nonprofit sector, they're a really good representation to be part of this collaborative. So what does it involve? We have monthly check-ins and support each other, and we talk about how are we allocating resources, what are the barriers that we're seeing, the strategies that we're implementing, are we seeing results, do we think that maybe there's a shift that we need to make. A lot of times we'll talk about duplication and how to avoid that. Inevitably, there are some meetings that all of us need to be part of, but if there are meetings that we all don't need to be a part of and the information gleaned from that meeting with other stakeholders can be just shared at this collaborative, we'll do that, because our time and resources are precious and they're really finite when you look that to see I only have two staff dedicated to homelessness in the unit. Under stakeholder engagement, the third item I want to talk about is one-on-ones with continuums of care. So there's 10 continuums of care in the state of Minnesota, four of which who have declared an end to veteran homelessness. The other six, we're actively engaged with one-on-ones with them, and we update them on their current registry numbers for homeless veterans. We identify barriers to ending veteran homelessness with them, and we strategize solutions for overcoming those barriers for those specific communities, because the barriers that are present in Kitson County may not be the same barriers we see in Hennepin and vice versa. So we really look at tailored response to each COC to get them closer to declaring an end. For COCs that are close to reaching the federal benchmarks for declaring, we work with them to prepare their submission paperwork of evidence to the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness, which is the federal governing body that will allow you to certify you and allow you to declare the end. And as Deputy Commissioner Lindsay said, we're excited that the federal government's reopened because now we can work with the Southeast COC to submit their paperwork and go through the review process with them, and hopefully we'll see a declaration come through, and that would include 20 different communities in Minnesota. So next, I want to talk about our SOAR program, and we have a short video that I want to play for the committee. Let me, hopefully the audio will work.
The snowmobile and I went through the ice, and I got all wet, you know, and it was 20 below that night. And so then I just, you know, got out of the water and started walking.
Then they started talking about the after effects of frostbite and the potential amputation.
We were in a divorce and custody battle, and we were homeless.
Missing a lot of work because my knees were swelled up, so I was having a real hard time. I was in a homeless shelter in a pretty dark place back then. I was a real mess.
The MDVA Veterans SOAR program really revolves around connecting at-risk veterans and veterans who are experiencing homelessness with Social Security disability benefits.
He introduced me to the SOAR program and let me know that possibly be people there that could help me with my SSI, and that's when I met Alex.
We become their authorized representative for the veterans, which allows us to communicate not only just to the veteran, but to Social Security on their behalf. The benefits from the SOAR program, the main one was the financial stability of it. Due to a court order with the custody and parenting time, we were forced to move from our home up north and move down to the cities where rent is triple. And I would not have been able to comply with that court order, and I would have lost the custody of my three kids. A side benefit of that was I was able to also get health insurance.
The entire Veterans SOAR team are veterans themselves. So we really take pride and a passion in assisting veterans.
The MDVA has made it possible for us to navigate Brian's recovery, to get what Brian needs to function here and to live as normal of a life as he can.
They don't just come and fill out the paperwork and then leave, you know, and leave you with a number to follow up. They are your mentor. They're there literally every step of the way, start to finish, and even after finish, follow up.
I want to help spread the word that it's good people out here like that to help veterans, and that's what we all need. You know, sometimes you just need somebody to help pull you up, you know?
We want to make sure that every veteran across the state of Minnesota knows that this program exists. The providers that work with veterans on a daily basis know this program exists. And we want to make sure that they know how to properly refer veterans to our program.
I was in the Army, and my rank was private.
I was with the Army National Guard, and I was a 92 Fox.
I was a warrant officer in the Army. I was a helicopter pilot. I served 20 years, and I'm currently retired.
We've already seen a lot of really inspirational examples of what Social Security disability benefits can do for veterans and their families. I can speak for the rest of the SOAR team in that we're really fortunate to wake up and go to a job that we love to do every day and help veterans who need that helping hand.
So the MDVA's Veterans SOAR program launched on March 31st of 2016 with key partners, Department of Human Services and the Social Security Administration. We launched it with both commissioners and the area director of Social Security at the Federal Whipple Building. And the program's designed to help Minnesota veterans who are homeless or at risk of being homeless and have a severe impairment apply for Social Security disability benefits. The path of recovery is challenging when basic needs are unmet. The SSI and SSDI application process is very complicated, and there's often a disconnect between those experiencing homelessness and the disability application process. And to expand on that, the homeless population often, there's no stable address, no phone number, there could be a mental impairment, some substance abuse issues, and no recent medical exams. So the SOAR process really focuses on that connection with the veteran, getting the information from the veteran, getting medical records on behalf of the veteran, and having it nested in our homeless programs allows us that connection at our registry meetings where we have street outreach workers and partners who are at all the shelters regularly who may have contact with the veteran and can get us in contact to finish that process. Our representatives help them with the forms, make sure that we hit the dates and deadlines, and maintain contact. The benefits, sustained income. Veterans can receive Social Security disability in conjunction with or as an alternative to VA disability benefits. Health insurance. Veterans can use the Medicaid and Medicare health benefits that come with SSI and SSDI to supplement their VA health services. And the benefits of the state, it reduces reliability on state-funded assistance programs like GA and MA. The economic impact of the state and local communities can be seen. I'm going to have a slide on that in the future. And then it increases the ability for individuals to remain in or enter into community living from, say, transitional housing.
Mr. Jarvis, on this point, so in a prior life in the labor movement, I worked on some Social Security disability issues for my union. Generally, it would take 2 to 3 hearings to get it approved. Do you see that as the same for veterans' issues on this type of stuff?
Mr. Chair, great question. I believe 2 slides from now I'm going to show you some average days to approval.
I'm ahead of the presentation. We'll hopefully blow the
committee's socks
Thank
off.
Thank you.
This slide here talks about the approval rate for homeless individuals without SOAR nationally is 10 to 15%. If they use the SOAR methodology, which comes from the federal SAMHSA, nationally they're about 65% approval rate. And then when you look at the 10 highest performing states that use a SOAR methodology, that's about 82%. So on this next slide, it's SOAR initial application approval rate. If you look at MDVA Veteran SOAR program, we're at 83%. SSA nationally is 29%. Other providers in the state that do SOAR are at 53%. So our veteran SOAR program is 30% higher than any other SOAR provider in the state. DHS manages kind of this methodology of SOAR that's pushed down from the federal government, and they contract with counties, nonprofits to teach this methodology and hold people kind of to the requirements of it. But the difference with our SOAR methodology is really it's about focusing on partnerships and collaborations and really having staff that are dedicated to this process. And I think you can see a 30% increase statewide. And now our methodology of that dedication and partnerships is being modeled by DHS to other providers across the state. And this gets to your point, Mr. Chair, your question about the average number of days to initial decision is 81 days for our program. And SSA nationally is 365. So I think that's an amazing reduction, and that's why we've decided to make this permanent.
Thank you.
Counties with MDVA SOAR applications. So far, we have applications from 30 different counties depicted by this map here. Counties with MDVA SOAR approvals to date, going from 2016, when we ended the year after we launched it, we had 10 counties, and in 2018, 26 counties where we have approvals with Social Security applications. So the impact of that, let's look at some of the outcomes. Federal dollars received to veterans because of Veteran SOAR is, to date, is $1.257 million annually. And that also includes back payments to veterans because of our program, just over $272,000 to date. And I will say that this is even with some staffing shortages that we've had, because we've had some fluctuations with staff promoting within. So I believe that when we get fully staffed, we'll see this number increase exponentially. And those real dollars going into real communities in Minnesota. So looking at homeless programs overall as a state, we've stably housed over 1,668 homeless veterans since the registry kicked off just over 4 years ago. And since 2010, there's been a reduction of 53.3% in homelessness among veterans compared to 48.9% nationally. And that's based off of the 2010-2018 PIC count data. The 2019 PIC count was just done last week, so we'd expect that data maybe late summer. This is a map showing the four continuums of care that have declared an end, and the southeast here is the next COC that we're working with to get their paperwork submitted to USCH.
Mr. Chair. Yep. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jarvis. I'm trying to look through here. Is SOAR an acronym? Does it actually stand for? I couldn't find it in the materials. What does the acronym stand for? I know it used SOAR as an Air Force term, I guess, but what does SOAR mean?
All right, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Jarvis.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative Detmer, thank you for calling me out on the acronym. Sometimes I forget to spell it out. So SOAR stands for SSI, SSDI, Outreach, Access, and Recovery.
Okay.
I'm glad you shortened that up, Mr. Jarvis.
Yep. Yep.
I have one quick question on this page. So the white areas are showing where you're at. What's going on with all the gray areas then?
On Mr. Chair, is this showing up as gray on your printout?
Right.
All right, so the gray areas here, which are green on my chart, are the COCs that have declared an end to veteran homelessness.
Okay, all right.
Yep, and the oddity is this right, this sliver here and this sliver here is the same COC. That COC is just broken up because the St. Louis County is its own COC.
Right. From where I'm from, they're the big kids on the block, so.
Yep.
All right.
This next slide, it meshes a couple different things. The line you see is the veterans point in time count data through 2018 from 2007, and then milestones regarding veteran homelessness. I want to start out just by, I'm not going to highlight every milestone, but in 2010, the federal VA with a local prioritization of HUD-VASH for the most vulnerable, and then we also launched the MDVA MOVE program in 2010. In 2013, the Heading Home Plan calls to end homelessness on a veteran-by-veteran basis, and we launched the registry December of 2014, as previously mentioned. And then we see in 2016, the first COC, the Southwest Minnesota, confirmed to meet the benchmarks. And then in 2017, we had the West Central, the Northwest, and the Northeast declare. And we're hoping that in 2019, soon here, we can start the year off right with the Southeast Minnesota COC. This next slide is shelter assistance from MDVA. So the top line, which is red on my screen and some funky color on your TVs here, and this is not in your packet. This is something I added today, so I apologize about that. But this shows the dollar amount in hundred thousands of MDVA financial assistance for shelter through our state soldiers assistance program. And then the bottom line is the PIT count data. And you can see that they're closely correlated. And I'm going to go to this next slide, which is PIT adjusted. So the PIT count happens every January. So when I show you on this previous slide in 2010, you see a spike that's more indicative of 2009 than it really is in 2010 because the count's a one-time count in January. So on the PIT adjusted, I just slide that PIT count to the left. And then you can see a little more clearly how our shelter assistance through SSAP is closely correlated to the amount of homeless veterans we're seeing. And that's just indicative of market factors. It's not a conscious decision we've made to spend more money on shelter. These are requests from veterans and county veteran service officers for assistance with shelter. And that's primarily preventative in nature, with the occasional security deposit for an individual who may be homeless and they need that security deposit to get into the community again. So going back to a previous question, Mr. Chair, this is a breakout of the homeless veteran registry numbers by COC. You see the total 236 down there at the bottom. That's as of this last Friday, the 25th of January. These numbers change every single day because every day we are identifying veterans and we're housing veterans, so it's very fluid. You'll notice four of those COCs, their COC heading is green in the background. That's because they've declared an end. But you may see that there's still a homeless individual in that community because, like Deputy Commissioner Lindsay had said, it's not that we're never going to have a homeless individual in that COC, but it's that we have the appropriate systems in place, systems, policies, transitional housing units, and structure in place to rapidly rehouse that individual in a short amount of time. And then you can see each COC is broken out by not reviewed and housing plan. Housing plan means that we know how we're going to house them. We're just trying to action it. So they have a HUD-VASH voucher for subsidized rent. We're just trying to find an apartment. Not reviewed is a little misleading. It doesn't mean necessarily that they have not completely been reviewed. We may have talked about them a multitude of times, but they don't have a housing plan. They could be in transitional housing. They could have high barriers that we're trying to overcome. And really it's just that we don't know the plan forward for that individual. So this slide is veterans housed versus identified. Initially, the housing outcomes were near zero at the registry ramp up. Just by virtue of that fact, initially providers were mainly focused on getting veterans onto the registry. As you can see on the graphic, we started out identifying a lot of veterans, and as times went on, we got better at it as a collective group for, and also with housing veterans about as fast as we were identifying them. The spikes of veterans identified that you see in August of every year are directly correlated to the Metro stand-down event that MACV handles, and most known veterans identified were added to the registry within a month or two, which also meant that housing outcomes after that first month or two were accurate when we saw spikes there. And then if I can draw your attention to the inlaid table, we can see that while the average monthly veteran identified has gone down steadily since 2016, in 2018 we experienced a drop in monthly average of veterans housed. We believe this is directly related to the barriers and legislative opportunities that I'm going to speak to next. So when we look at top barriers to accomplishing our goal, there's really three, and they're closely related and intertwined. Availability of housing units, which is market-driven, high barrier veterans, and landlord engagement and support, which is relationship-driven. And I wanted to point out relationship-driven versus market-driven, because sometimes people may say, well, landlord engagement and support and availability of housing units, isn't that kind of the same thing, or couldn't you condense it? Well, one's driven really by market and private factors, and the other one's relationship driven. So let's talk about availability of housing units. The rental vacancy rate, especially in the metro, is extremely low. That's causing a lot of different things to happen. We're seeing increasing rent amounts, and sometimes those rent amounts are over what subsidies can pay for. So if I have a veteran out there with a HUD-VASH voucher or another Section 8 voucher, there's a set amount that subsidy can pay. And typically we're fine if we start to get into like your three or four bedroom units, the dollar amounts and limits increase and we can house individuals. But if you're looking at one and sometimes two bedroom units, it can be extremely hard to find an affordable unit to place a veteran in. At any given time, there's approximately 130 veterans out searching for housing with the HUD-VASH voucher. And those veterans who have low barriers are housed in less than 90 days, but it can take upwards of over 180 days for high barrier veterans to find housing. We literally have, you know, over 66, 70 veterans approximately that are out there with a subsidy that can't find a unit to get into. Some of that's because of the rent amount. Some of it's because stricter screening criteria. As vacancy rates drop, it's a private market. Landlords can be stricter on their criteria, such as a criminal history record or rental history. And then also when we look at new developments, they're not aligned with what the homeless population needs. You know, when new developments, people are looking at market rate apartments and luxury apartment units. And what we need are low income and affordable housing units for veterans. When we look at high barrier veterans, they're facing substance use disorders, mental health issues, criminal history, poor rental history, which goes into that strict screening criteria. We look at case manager and street outreach workers with high caseloads. When we're getting towards the bottom of the list here of veterans and they have high barriers, those case managers and street outreach workers need to spend more time with that individual to overcome their barriers. To accurately identify what are their barriers, how are we going to overcome them. And at the rate of the caseloads for these individuals, it's not sustainable and we're finding problems doing that. And also supportive services are not seamless. Depending on what type of program they're in currently, those supportive services such as employment coaching, mental health counseling, social work support, they may end once they leave transitional housing or maybe the overlap period is only 30 days. And so it's really about trying to find future supportive services when they get back into the community that they can utilize and trying to figure out how to accurately bridge that gap. And it has some of us asking, do we need safe havens? These are safe havens, our communities, units, apartment units that are designed with supportive services on site 24/7 for those individuals with the highest barriers. Because that still is going to remain an issue. We have, I know a veteran, we work with Senator Bonhoff for many years on, and we house that individual at least two times, and every time we house that individual within 30 days, 60 days, they were homeless again. And it wasn't because of anything that the partners or case managers were doing. It was because of the high barriers of that veteran.
Mr. Jarvis, you brought somebody in from Los Angeles to help with this. Is the safe haven issue something that they've looked at out in Southern California?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if that coach with the Build for Zero campaign has dealt with safe havens, but I know that the federal VA has looked at safe havens, and they believe that it's an option that we need to at least have on the table and do some more kind of investigation to see if that's a path we need to go down.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Jarvis. Have you come across in some of the housing that you come across where there might be some veterans' preferences for, you know, being able to rent to the veterans? Is that something that our state has looked at, or have you come across that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer. So a couple points to that. We have some veterans' preference within, like the Hennepin Continuum of Care has a veterans' preference, which gives veterans a preference to access programs that can provide funding and placement for housing. As far as a preference with an actual property manager or landlord, to date, we don't. There are some veteran communities like Upper Post and Dominium with their new development that they're doing over on the historic Fort Snelling, and we're talking to them about a veteran's preference. And it was probably about 4 years ago now that we approached HUD for an actual opinion from their legal counsel on can property managers and landlords have a veteran's preference. And they said that it's not against the Fair Housing Act to have a preference on any subpopulation if it's essentially based on the fact that, you know, they're coming with supportive services and things of that nature.
And Mr. Chair, just a follow-up, Mr. Jarvis. I would hope that when the upper pulse is developed, you know, the whole one way that they were able to get this through the legislature was the idea of veterans' preferences. And I hope that the department really follows through and making sure that they follow through on that too. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, we agree, and we have been engaged with Dominium on that preference, and we're confident one of the barriers that we're discussing with them is about that the subsidies are not covering the cost of a one- or two-bedroom, so we're trying to strategize ways with them to overcome those barriers. But we agree wholeheartedly that that development on Historic Fort Snelling should have a preference to veterans who have served this country. And lastly, landlord engagement and support. So that's relationship driven. We've heard a lot from landlords, and they want is one phone number, one person that they can call 24/7. If they have an issue with a veteran tenant, they want to be able to call that individual and know that the problem is being dealt with. And that may involve risk mitigation funds. So risk mitigation funds, it could be a fund that can cover the cost of a broken door or a hole in the wall or something of that nature versus the landlord having to evict and take the cost out of the security deposit on the apartment. And we need to find ways to just engage better and more with landlords, property managers, developers, and local elected officials. I mean, when we look at homelessness, it really is a local problem. When we talk about housing units, we know that local governments are approving developments and comprehensive plans that are going to the Met Council. And so we have the mayor's challenge, which some of the mayors have accepted, but we want to work more and better with the local elected officials to increase the support for development for affordable housing. And my last slide, legislative opportunities. So the Government Data Practices Act, Minnesota Statute Chapter 13, classifying data regarding homeless individuals as an urgent and emergent issue related to housing as a subcategory of current government data practice law would greatly enhance our ability to ensure that every homeless individual is being identified. Additionally, it would reduce overlap in services and improve our confidence in data surrounding homeless individuals across the state. And the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs adopted a similar rule change in 2018 called Routine Use 30 to allow information related to homelessness to be shared across agencies and partners, resulting in increased coordination of homeless response systems of nationwide. And I wanted to read that verbatim because our lawyer wrote it to make sure I accurately said it, right? But to give you some background, when we created the registry, it wasn't an easy process. It started at a data team meeting at Minnesota Housing with representatives from all these different agencies there. And we said, the only way we're going to end homelessness is if we know who they are. We need a list of homeless individuals so we can start going down and figuring out what the issues are. And everyone looked at us. Every single agency looked at us like we had got up and swore at church. They say, you're crazy. You can't do that. You can't share data. It's private. And we walked away, and we knew we needed to do it. And we've been very successful in creating the registry and sharing data. But that doesn't come without its drawbacks. We had our first round of Tennyson listed what we had thought were the key partners. And then as we grew and became more collaborative and we're working in greater Minnesota and new nonprofits came into this in the spectrum and sphere to help veterans, we couldn't invite them to the table. We couldn't have them sit in the room and discuss veterans because they may hear something about a veteran that signed a Tennyson that didn't have their name on it. And so we created a new Tennyson. But that still had problems. Every single veteran that was active on the registry, we had to have case managers go out and get that veteran to sign a new Tennyson so that we didn't have to have fractured meetings where we said, here's the first meeting with, we'll talk about all the new Tennyson people, and then we're going to kick half of you out, and we're going to talk about the old Tennyson people that haven't really signed a new Tennyson. So really open up how we classify data on individuals of homeless. It allows us to be a lot more collaborative, allows us to share information, and allows an individual to work with other agencies to come up with a strategy to overcome barriers to house that individual. So we feel really strongly about this. The State Director to Prevention and Homelessness feels strongly as well, and we would love to engage with this committee or any committee regarding this as an opportunity. And the second opportunity is to engage with Minnesota Housing and the State Director to Prevent and End Homelessness on opportunities for more affordable housing. As Commissioner Jennifer Ho has stated in a recent NPR article, Minnesota needs more housing, especially at lower income levels in a market that's primarily private. And we understand that this is a private market, but I think there's some things that we can do, and we have a couple different groups like the Unsheltered Design Group that I think would have good ideas to bring to discuss that issue. So pending any questions.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jarvis, has the Veterans Courts, have they ever referred people to the SOAR program? You know, I believe there's, what, 8 or 9 counties that have veterans courts.
Sure.
So just curious.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
be sitting in on one of the counties this Friday on their court system, and it would be interesting to see what if there's any referrals from the courts.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, no, to date we haven't received any referrals from the veterans court system.
Thank you.
I mean, the possibility exists, though, that we've received a referral directly from a CVSO, and that individual could have been involved in Veterans Court, but the correlation was never was linked. But we could start to because it's a big, good point. We'll look at that as a data element to track in the future. I think that'd be a good correlation to.
Thank you.
Questions? Any questions from the public? Thank you for the presentation. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members.
Okay, next up we have Minnesota Assistant Counsel for Veterans, and now that I read it, I know what MACV is. So, Neil, you'll have to help me with your name.
Mr. Chair, Lloydo.
Lloydo, okay, thank you.
Chair Eklund, committee members, I am Neil Lloydalt, and I lead the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, or MACV, as you've already heard. We are a 501c3 nonprofit that operates throughout Minnesota with a mission to end veteran homelessness in our state. I've been with MACV since February of 2017 after leaving full-time service with the Minnesota National Guard. As I begin my third year of service at MACV, I'm excited to be here this afternoon to discuss our organization, review our 2018 impact, and provide a look at the years to come. We can and will achieve functional zero for veteran homelessness within the next 2 years. So thank you for inviting me here today. MACV has been serving veterans who are homeless or at risk of homelessness for over 25 years. We do so with a wide-reaching and comprehensive network of partners who work throughout the state to identify veterans in need and coordinate comprehensive services for long-term housing stability. We are very proud of our model and seek to avoid duplication of efforts throughout systems of homelessness support. At the statewide level, we are partnered with each county veteran service office, local veteran service organizations, tribal veteran service officers, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, as we just heard from, and the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs. We further enhance these partnerships with great organizations like St. Stephen's Human Services, Catholic Charities, Lutheran Social Services, Salvation Army, Union Gospel Mission, Goodwill Easter Seals, the Red Lake Homeless Shelter for Tribal Outreach, and so many others. As the only statewide nonprofit dedicating to veteran homelessness in Minnesota, we take a leadership role with the statewide homeless veteran registry efforts, partnering with the MDVA and the regional homeless continuums of cares to coordinate services for veterans impacted by homelessness within all Minnesota counties. We maximize funding from federal sources, bringing grants to the state through the Department of Labor, Housing and Urban Development, and VA, as well as corporate and foundation funds to carry out our mission. Our team is talented, diverse, and committed to ending veteran homelessness. Approximately 50 strong throughout the state, we have over 100 combined years of housing experience. Over half of our staff are veterans, spanning the service continuum from 1966 until the present. And many are also active members of the Disabled American Veterans, American Legion, and Veterans of Foreign Wars. Several of our team have received national-level awards, and in 2018, three of our staff were selected to present at the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans Conference in Washington, D.C. We take pride in our work and strive to be the best partner in the mission to end veteran homelessness that we can be. We believe that no American veteran should be homeless because no American should be homeless. And if we can't solve veteran homelessness first, as we just heard from MNDVA, we will never solve homelessness overall. We operate regional offices in Minneapolis, Duluth, and Mankato, and from there we carry services to all 87 Minnesota counties. Key to success in our programs is intensive case management each veteran receives, along with direct financial assistance. We assess each veteran served for housing status, health and mental health needs, employment and income, appropriate housing, living skills, optical and dental care needs, and legal issues to develop the strongest possible stability plan that we can. Please allow me to share an example of how we do this. A 55-year-old Army veteran was referred to MACV by a community partner as she was living in her car, surviving on only $136 per month from her service-connected disability. She had been living with her pregnant daughter, who had asked her to leave, needing a space for the new baby. We assisted her in finding and moving into housing and connecting her with a HUD-VASH Section 8 voucher. We then enrolled her into our employment program. When she found a job earning over $40,000 per year, she turned back her voucher as she was earning enough money to live on so that it could be used by another veteran who would need it more. To do this, we operate 121 beds of transitional and permanent supportive housing, including units in Duluth, Hibbing, Mankato, Minneapolis, St. Paul, St. Cloud, Richfield, and Maplewood. We partner with sand companies to be the service provider for the 37-unit Linden Grove Veterans Apartments in St. Cloud. And we are very excited for our new partnerships with Housing First Minnesota and Lennar Builders that have provided a family house and a house specifically for women veterans. Our partnership with the United Way of Northeast Minnesota to open a home in Hibbing for veterans on the Iron Range began in 2018 and currently has two of three rooms with veterans in them. We provide rental, security deposit, mortgage, utility, transportation, and other critical assistance through a variety of funding sources, including funding through the state to rapidly rehouse homeless veterans and prevent episodes of homelessness for Minnesota veterans and their families. Through our statewide employment grants, we work to stabilize veterans' income through employment. Through our Department of Labor grants in 2018, we placed 134 veterans into employment at an average hourly wage of $17.51 per hour, representing annual gross wages of approximately $4.8 million. 79% of our veterans who got jobs through our program kept their position for at least 6 months. Our 10 stand-downs in 2018 served over 2,100 veterans, giving on-site same-day access to housing, employment, health care, veterans benefits, community benefits, legal services to include a stand-down legal court. With a laser focus in 2018, our stand-down served over 250 homeless veterans, many of whom were identified for the first time through this unique outreach effort. In 2018, we hosted 38 legal clinics in 16 communities across Minnesota, serving 1,684 veterans, as well as providing full representation services to veterans whose civil legal issues presented the direct barrier to housing or employment stability. This is key to long-term stability for our clients because oftentimes legal matters can be serious and seemingly insurmountable barrier to stability. Whether it's a child support modification, housing or employment law, or any number of destabilizing legal situations, our vet law staff and partners are there to provide outstanding and nationally recognized services. In 2018, we enrolled over 1,400 veterans for direct housing support services, 47% of whom were homeless at the time. 69% had a disability, 11% were women veterans, and 30% had dependent children. This is all made possible, in part, by the funding you provide. Please let me share some specifics on the monies you appropriated to us in the last biennial budget cycle. Since 1 July of 2017 through the end of December, we have spent $1,272,376 from the total two-year appropriation of $1.5 million. This represents 85% of the total allotment, while only being 75% of the way through the grant cycle. Half of this funding supports our case management, and half is direct financial assistance on behalf of veterans. This support is contemplated and leveraged by federal grant programs that provide additional case management, staffing, administrative, and direct financial assistance resources. The federal VA has recognized us as a mentor program for new grantees due to our efficiency and program success. With respect to your appropriated funds, we are audited yearly by the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and in 2018, after that yearly review, they said, MDVA greatly values our partnership with the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans and the work you do daily to assist Minnesota veterans. While our federal and state funds assist us significantly in helping veterans, there's a gap between those funds' support and the level of need that we are experiencing. Approximately 20% of MACV's financial assistance on behalf of veterans, for example, rent, utilities, security deposits, vehicle repairs for work, food, and more, are funded by non-governmental sources that we strive to raise funds for. In 2018 alone, MACV provided direct financial assistance on behalf of veterans in the amount of $255,769 that was not supported by our federal or state funding sources. This number is support for approximately 280 veterans. In 2019, we conservatively project over $300,000 in direct financial assistance needs not funded by government sources. In our legislatively appropriated grant administered by the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, we are projecting to fully expend our direct assistance by the end of March, a full 3 months before the end of the grant period. While this gap is currently met to the best of our abilities through our fundraising efforts, additional support can help ensure that those fundraising dollars are used for the most challenging cases and unanticipated client needs, rising as we approach functional zero. What does 2019 hold? First, a story from 2018 about what a year-long focus on women veteran homelessness taught us. The registry began at 17 homeless women veterans and is currently at 9. During the year, the number peaked at over 30 women veterans, and the lowest point was 6. Throughout this year, we housed 35 homeless women veterans. And we learned a great deal about dependent children and housing regulations related to legally unrelated minors under the care of a woman veteran. We learned how to get a dangerous pet rider for a rental agreement so that a veteran could keep her dog. And we learned which creative organizations can help us solve transportation problems. We added new partners like Soldiers Wish, who provided grants to help two women veterans with dependent children out of long-term homelessness. Most importantly, however, we gained a true appreciation for the unmet need. As we developed new options to serve more women veterans, we discovered more women veterans in need. We also learned that we can get to functional zero with a laser focus on subpopulations and geographies, one at a time. The wise adage is proving true here as well, and some would say that's how these things get to be wise old adages, namely that a journey of 1,000 miles begins one step at a time. The same holds true for ending veteran homelessness, one veteran at a time. In 2019, we intend to achieve functional zero for women veterans by the end of the first quarter. Of the 10 homeless continuum of cares, 4 have formally declared a functional end to veteran homelessness. What does it mean when we say we have ended veteran homelessness? It means that the systems and resources are in place to ensure that any veteran experiencing homelessness can quickly be provided resources for housing, and that episodes of homelessness are rare, brief, and non-reoccurring. This allows MACV to focus resources within those continuums of care on preventing homelessness from occurring in the first place. Our goal, as you also heard previously, is to add the Southeast, then suburban metro, Central Minnesota, and St. Louis County COCs to the list, hopefully by the end of 2019, and complete the job in the urban centers of Hennepin and Ramsey counties by the end of 2020, so that Minnesota can join Connecticut, Delaware, and Virginia as states that have declared a functional end to veteran homelessness. You might choose to help us here. I recall my previous remarks about funding that in 2018 we spent $255,769 of non-governmental funding directly on veterans. This funding is from foundations, local veteran service organizations, and the pure generosity of individual Minnesotans who provide anywhere from $5 to $5,000 to support the mission. You could choose to include funding for MACV in your upcoming appropriations. Let me close by reminding you today that in Minnesota there are 236 United States military veterans experiencing homelessness, and many more are at risk. Based on historical data, we expect 367 veterans to become homeless over the next 12 months. That's 603 veterans that we need to sustainably house and support. We are here to serve every veteran in Minnesota experiencing homelessness. There are veterans living from the Iron Range to the Red River Valley, from our North Woods to the Southern Plains. These are veterans sleeping in Twin Cities shelters or on the light rail because they are too scared to go to the shelter. We recently, during the pit count, helped a veteran and his wife who had been living in their car for 3 years with their pets because they could not bear to be separated in a shelter. These are veterans living homeless in the 11 Native nations that share their geography with Minnesota. These are veterans ranging from their early 20s to their 80s. These are women veterans. These are underserved LGBTQ veterans who have resisted VA resources feeling like it wasn't for them. We believe that through our services and our close partnerships, we will see a day soon in which every Minnesota veteran who becomes homeless will have immediate systems of support available for long-term housing stability. Thank you for your past support and your consideration of future partnership with us in achieving our mission to end veteran homelessness in Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Lindell, thank you for the work that you do. The question that I have is there's a causal relationship in a life that presents itself and it manifests itself in homelessness. So there could be mental health issues. There could be job-related issues. There could be things related to, or when I say jobs, I mean like skills or things like that. We need to be able to provide stability for the veterans in getting them in a safe place to live. After that stability, is there something that your organization is doing, or what organization is there that's stepping in to help these veterans to be able to basically get moving on with their life so that, because the housing is an important step, but it's only one step from what I see. So what resources are available to help these veterans with all those other things?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Miller, our primary focus, as we have been discussing, is the housing first component, which is actually what the philosophy is called. Namely, you get a veteran into stable housing so that they can work on their job issue, their chemical dependency, their physical disability. The average length of our case management is just short of 90 days. And so in that time period, we are attempting to connect veterans with other additional community resources that can help them sustain, whether it's their chemical dependency or their physical disability. The federal VA is one of the primary sources that we use. A good number of our clients are connected to the VA or doctor at the VA or get services from the VA. But we also use a whole range of other community partners that I mentioned who are experts in providing those services. We are not licensed professional social workers. Those people exist at St. Stephen's, they exist at the federal VA, and so we count on our partners to help veterans sustain their long-term stability.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just one quick follow-up. Sure. So what I hear you say is as part of your program, you make sure those connections are made, or is there something with MDVA that makes those connections? Because I'm not diminishing the need for the housing. I think that's incredibly critical to get people into a healthy place. But with the housing alone, that veteran who gets the housing, they're not going to go say, now I can go deal with this mental health issue, or now I can deal with job training, or now I can deal with these other things, substance abuse. Is there a connecting point that someone kind of picks that ball up? And maybe it's through MDVA. I'm trying to learn this here. I'm just curious what that connection is.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, in all cases, we prepare a housing stability plan for the veteran. It includes the very things that you're talking about, and it is given to the veteran for the veteran to share with those agencies that are are best suited to help relative to the recovery. But I have to suggest to you, having done this now just for 2 years, it is an area where we have a gap, because we have learned that the longer that I can stay connected to you personally as your case manager, the much more likely you are to be able to stay on path to your housing stability. And as we heard the MDVA team discuss relative to some of their initiatives, this idea of 24/7 hotline, it's for the landlords, no doubt, but it's landlords who need to call that number to say, hey, something's happening to the veteran in Unit 7. Can you send somebody over right away to be able to help them out?
Okay. Oh, good. Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Little, could you explain to the committee what the process goes through? Are these veterans referred to you? And when they do come to you, how do you verify their eligibility for the programs that MACV has?
So veterans are both referred to us, and our case managers are well enough known in certain parts of the state to find veterans on their own. But the primary source is through referrals. So I mentioned the Stand Down program. Significant number of referrals come from Stand Down. Those 38 legal clinics are identifying veterans who could use our services. But really the primary source of referrals are county veteran service officers and the state veteran service organizations. They either refer directly to us, or as in the example that I think Mr. Gervais used about Veterans Court, somebody referred the veteran to the county veteran service officer, who then referred them to us. A veteran who comes from a county veteran service officer usually comes prepared with a 214 and a couple of other documents, because the CVSO has told them to do so. That's not always the case throughout the rest of the spectrum, and so one of the first steps is to determine a veteran's eligibility by securing their 214 from the appropriate service.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Lidholt. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your work. And any questions or comments from the audience? Mr. Thompson? Come on up and identify yourself for the committee. And just so you know, that things will run through the chair and not to the presenters.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Tommy Johnson. I am the legislative officer and the homeless veterans officer for the Department of Minnesota Veterans of Foreign Wars. These two positions that I hold are appointed by the commander. I serve at the pleasure of the commander. This testimony on behalf of the Veteran of Foreign Wars is difficult to present. MACV was formed in 1990 with the vision of VFW life member Durbin Keeney and the financial assistance of the VFW. The VFW realized an efficient, effective, and timely organization was necessary to augment federal, state, and local units of government to address the needs of veterans that are homeless and at risk of homelessness. Throughout the years, the VFW has continued to support MACV and its mission of ending veteran homelessness. VFW posts, VFW districts, there are 9 in Minnesota, and VFW Minnesota has limited funds. Our philosophy is if there is a federal, a state, or a local program to pay, for instance, rent or security deposits, those funds should be used for those purposes. We believe our funds should be used to fill in the gaps where no other funding exists. They should not be used to duplicate services. The VFW has been concerned with how MACV operates with regards to its mission of ending veteran homelessness going back to 2016. While MACV does many things well, timeliness of getting homeless veterans housed and getting payment to those that house them has been a concern. MACV dismissed its executive director in April of 26 and operated under an interim executive director. In January of 2017, then interim executive director Nathaniel Saltz requested a letter of support for MACV from the VFW for a federal grant. The VFW provided that letter of support as we felt MACV was turning the corner and righting the ship. Neil Leudolt was brought on shortly after, and we were encouraged. By the end of 2017, we were again concerned. On December 7th, 2017, we questioned the VA at a town hall in Forest Lake on why the SSVF grant program, which MACV holds essentially for the entire state of Minnesota, was a non-competitive grant for existing grantees only. The VFW is increasingly concerned, as our posts have had to fund expenditures where MACV does have access to federal, state, and other resources pertaining to rent and security deposits. One of our posts had to pay a security deposit to house a homeless female veteran in late November, as MACV could not and would not respond in a timely manner to secure the apartment. On December 21st, the VFW was contacted by a property management company that had recently housed 7 homeless veterans but had not received any money. In early January, 3 posts and 1 auxiliary wrote checks totaling $3,200 to avoid an unlawful detainer and eviction for a homeless veteran that had moved in on November 20th of that 7. As of today, I spoke to the property management company earlier. They are still waiting on money for 1 veteran out of that 7. The VFW is increasingly concerned at the non-response from MACV on case status of veterans referred to MACV for services and financial assistance. Just last week, the VFW had to pay $1,000 rent to avoid eviction because we were not sure if MACV was working on the assistance, because MACV did not respond to 2 requests for information on case status. The VFW is concerned with staff turnover in its metro office and the quality of its hires. Earlier this month, a very experienced case manager that has a track record of housing the most difficult to place veterans resigned from MACV. This case manager had extensive experience working with property managers and managers and an intimate understanding of their business models and operations. In placing homeless veterans, there are 2 key constituencies. There is the veteran and there is the property manager and owners that house them. At the end of the day, MACV is in the multi-housing industry, supplying, if you will, renters, homeless veterans, to the owners and managers. The bottom line is that if owners and managers are not happy with how MACV operates, they will be reluctant to house the veterans MACV seeks to house. We believe one of the reasons Hennepin and Ramsey counties have not joined the list of 68 communities and over 30 states that have ended veteran homelessness is that MACV's leadership and staff have a woeful lack of knowledge and professional experience in the industry they are in. MACV's leadership is doing many things right, as you heard earlier today. We believe they are missing the boat on their primary responsibility, housing homeless veterans and providing a positive experience to those that house the veterans. At our recently convened Department of Minnesota Midwinter Conference legislative session, MACV legislative appropriation was on the agenda and discussed at length. While the VFW will not oppose a legislative appropriation for fiscal year 2019 and 2020, if and when it comes before this committee, we cannot support it, given MACV's current performance and lack of accountability. Should the legislature approve what is usually a non-competitive appropriation, and should accountability and performance not improve, you can expect the VFW to be back in January 2020 advocating this appropriation become competitive. Thank you for your time.
Any questions for Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer.
Would you say that the commander's task force is support of this letter as written?
I do not know that. I know that it was discussed at the last commander's task force.
Because the VFW is part of the commander's task force, so that was my question. So
that is correct, Representative.
Okay.
Representative Detmer.
That was it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Johnson. I will allow Mac V at a future committee hearing to address these. We'll talk to them and we'll get it on the agenda. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. That's about it for our agenda today. One last thing, Representative Detmer had to bring up something, wants to bring up something that I think is kind of cool. So,
yeah, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to give credit where credit is due, but John Holquist here, my researcher, has put together a map of the world, and I'll bring it in next meeting, and it will be some pins representing the different military branches, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, and so forth. And people that are come to the meeting, they can put a pin on a place on the map of the world where they've served, where they've been deployed, or where they've served. So right now, the map is up on my office, 289. So anybody would stop by there and put their pin where they've served in the world. We just thought that was a neat thing to do for the committee. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Next week, I do promise, we will hear some bills. I told you that last week, but it will happen next week. And with that, we're adjourned.